You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
September the 26th, 2022, we are live streaming at rumble.com. You go to rumble.com, enter in the search engine, one word, Larry Connors, USA. You can open our right to our studio by punching the live button. You'll find previous postings as well. Share around with others. Let them know they can watch, like watch it on TV again. I'm just more handsome, even younger. Maybe your TV is not working that well at your end, or your computer, whatever you're watching on. We'll get it in, get it fixed for you. So the left continues to find every way they can to attack anyone on the right. That would include some who are actually Democrat now that say, you know, my party's left me. I want nothing to do with these folks, what they're doing. In fact, today an MSNBC national affairs analyst insisted that all these folks around Donald Trump and their supporters are kind of gathering together. They're getting more stronger, more virulent, more toxic, more energized, more violent. He said they're going to eventually take up arms and lead, quote, to civil war. That's pretty harsh language. Of course, it comes from a leftist who has no problem with wars in our streets and violence all over our cities and states if they're being done in the cause of, quote, justice, which often they're not. You know how California is already going to ban gas cars by 2035. That's the plan, correct? Here comes another decision out of California. The folks are going to be leaving that state in hordes before they ever get to 2035. By 2030, California has voted to pass a ban to ban natural gas heaters and furnaces. That also will reduce smog, they say, to meet federal ozone levels and lower greenhouse gas emissions. I don't know how the governor's mansion will be kept heated. What do you think? Oh, they'll go electric. Oh, well, how do you get electric? Nuclear, yeah. Hydro, yeah. Windmills, yeah. Coal. No, we're not going to do that. Have you stopped to think how much more they're going to have to dig to find the minerals to make those batteries? And then we're going to run out of those long before we run out of oil and gas. By the way, Governor Newsom did sign a law the other day expanding the ability of illegals to obtain state identification. To get state identification, driver's licenses to undocumented residents. Now, what they're setting up eventually is if you get a driver's license, we'll also be sending you a notice if you want to vote. And they'll just simply accept it that you're a citizen. They won't be checking. On the other side of the nation, in Florida, a sheriff's deputy is working at a construction site area, and he gets run over and killed by a 32-year-old illegal from Honduras who never should have been in the country in that state. He ends up killing the deputy. In Chicago, a felon's arrested for driving a stolen vehicle who is already on bail on three other cases, including another for driving a stolen car. That's four charges against him. He's currently being held without bail, finally. This is what happens when they just begin to say, let's turn everybody loose. That's what you're going to see. And in Chicago this last weekend, nearly 40 shots, six fatally during another violent weekend in Lori Lightfoot's Chicago. We also have in Moscow, as you heard on the network news, a gunman killing 13, including seven children, wounding 21 others in a school in central Russia. No word on a motive at this time. Here's a story that's going to be shaking Europe and maybe even the U.S. political scene at some point. Giorgia Meloni, leader of the Brothers of Italy party, is now the new prime minister, the first female prime minister for Italy. But what she ran on, her motto, we defend God, country, and family. God, country, and family. That goes against a lot of the leftists that you find throughout Europe. There will be repercussions in other European nations. Watch. And we'll see how they affect the U.S. We want to get into some of that coming up in the next segment.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Your eyes are burning, you're sneezing, it's allergy season. Pollen readings are sky high. Heck, you can even see that yellow powder on everything. So that's also inside your air conditioning ducts. I suggest you call Wellington Environmental. Now, other companies will be glad to do the job, but they're going to come to your home or business, count the air ducts, and begin increasing the cost. In fact, the quoted price might even double. Wellington offers one price, no extras. You'll be charged exactly what Wellington quotes. So this is easy for you. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You will breathe easier. Wellington has a AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Before I could walk, I had a guitar in my hand. By the time I could talk, I had my own band. I went on the road when I was 8 years old. When I turned 15, I was stealing the show. Money to burn and the girls are pretty. It didn't take me long to learn it. I was born to boogie.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
They're playing games. These are political stunts with real human beings who are fleeing harm. I mean, do you know what's happening in Venezuela right now? Human beings, real people who have fled harm, who came to the United States of America seeking refuge, asylum. I think it is the height of irresponsibility, much less, frankly, a dereliction of duty when you are an elected leader to play those kinds of games with human life.
I have a real hard time accepting the statement of VP Harris calling out a dereliction of duty because Governor DeSantis sent 50 illegals to Martha's Vineyard. When Biden-Harris White House has thrown open our southern border and we've had something like 2 million illegals enter our nation through the southern border, unvetted, unchecked, and spread who knows where by their own efforts and are by the Biden night flights flying illegals deeper into the interior. And DeSantis sends 50 to Martha's Vineyard and suddenly he's using these illegals as pawns. Keep in mind, she doesn't call them illegals. They're called migrants. There's a reason they call them that, because they don't want you to think they're illegal. They're not illegal. They don't think it's wrong to cross our border if you're coming for asylum. Well, two things. Yes, our nation allows folks to enter on claims of asylum, but they've been well schooled if they're coming across our border illegally. Just say, I'm here for asylum. I'm here for asylum. Now, when she points to Venezuela, which is where these were that got sent to Martha's Vineyard, yes, it's a hellhole, and yes, it's communist, and they could be killed if they got sent back. That's a legitimate claim. But there are other legitimate claims that are ahead of them that have gone through the proper process. And then, of course, using them as pawns. That's what the Democrat Party has been doing from the very beginning, when Trump was trying to stem the tide of illegals during, right after Obama was in office. And Trump using the same so-called, quote, cages that Obama had used. But they weren't cages then. They were detaining facilities until Trump got in. Then they suddenly became cages. And when it comes to sending these illegals to Martha's Vineyard, are busing maybe up, maybe 9,000, maybe 10,000 New York City. Now, I don't even think the number is near that high. And the New York City mayor, Eric Adams, is just, oh my God, they're building tent cities for them. How's that going to hold up during the cold of the winter? And he's calling in for the hospital ship to come back. You know, they're gonna need it, because, well, you said you were a sanctuary city and state, so here are some for you. Because we're going to help them reach your state, because they're stuck way down along our border, jamming up all of our cities and counties and resources. So the Attorney General of Florida says, this makes no sense to me, does it you? Listen to her statement.
Well, what's so interesting to me is, you know, Governor Abbott, Governor DeSantis are arranging for folks to go to states that have said, we are sanctuary states. We welcome individuals. And if you look at the images when they are transported there, I mean, look in New York. They're setting up what they're calling tents. It looks like a hurricane has hit or something. Same in Martha's Vineyard. I think they called in the National Guard. These are the types of situations times 1,000 that they're dealing with in Texas and Arizona and even Florida every day. And so it's really a juxtaposition of, you know, when you say you're welcoming, you're a sanctuary state, but you don't have to deal with the challenges to health care, education. In Florida, we will spend $100 million in 1 year just incarcerating people that are here illegally committing crimes against Floridians. So it's, wow, it's a different thing to say welcome, but then when we say thank you, here, help us, they throw up their arms and start filing lawsuits. It's incredible.
Yeah, and she's right about the fact of the crimes they commit while they're here, and we know they've committed numerous crimes repeatedly in some cases. Now, you can say that they're not all here to commit crime, and I agree with that. Many are simply coming for a better life. And I agree that they would have a better life here than they would anywhere else. But again, it's this elite attitude and the leftist attitude that our doors are welcome and open for everyone, when they're really not. I ask you again, how many in Hollywood, since they got so many illegals in L.A. and around that area, how many have lowered the gates over their moats into their mansion and allowed illegals to come camp out on their lawn, or even put 10 to 12 families in one of their six-car garages? They'll be better sheltered than they would outside, and certainly from where they originated before they came into our country. When you see pictures of some of those coming across, especially if they are carrying children, which may or may not be their child. You have to remember that. They've also been schooled that you get into the country easier if you have a child. You look like a family unit. If you're just a single man coming across, you're more likely to be stopped, interrogated, and maybe sent back. But if you have a child, and if the child's too young to really answer questions, they may have been kidnapped from a family somewhere down south, maybe sold. Maybe the family actually thought that their child would be have a new life here, but they're not thinking about what would happen to the child along the way. Could you do that, by the way? Could you, despite your circumstances, would you turn your child over to strangers to travel 1,000 miles and believe that they're going to get the child safely to a new country and they will have an opportunity that you wouldn't have and you can't give them? Would you do that? I don't think you would. Because you know you care about your child, and you're going to take better care than what they probably are. And the reports of child molestation, rape, torture, being left for dead because they can't keep up are far too numerous for me to even move into at this point. But they're all documented. They're there. It's easy for you to pull and find. So for many people, crime and immigration, illegal immigration, are going to be the key decisions coming up on the midterm election. The Democrats want to make it about abortion the best they can. They think that's their better winning plan. And if they're trying to think that Biden's numbers have gone up a little bit because of legislative wins and things of this nature that I reported the other day, Jen Psaki, who was the Biden White House spokeswoman until she left so Jean-Pierre could come in as the first black lesbian to be a White House spokeswoman, Jen Psaki on MSNBC, on Meet the Press, NBC Meet the Press, said if the Democrats are betting on Biden to help carry them across the track and his record, that's not going to go very well.
Look, I think that Democrats, if the election is about who is the most extreme, as we saw, you know, Kevin McCarthy touch on there with Marjorie Taylor Greene, I'll say her name, sitting over his left side, then they're going to win. If it is a referendum on the president, they will lose. And they know that. They also know that crime is a huge vulnerability for Democrats. I would say one of the biggest vulnerabilities. And if you look at Pennsylvania, for example, what's been interesting to me is it's always you follow the money and where are people spending money. And in Pennsylvania, the Republicans have been spending millions of dollars on the air on crime ads against Fetterman because that's where they see his vulnerability. So, yes, the economy is hanging over everything, but you do have to look at state-by-state factors, and crime is a huge issue in the Pennsylvania race.
See, and Fetterman, she's right about that because he wants sentencing reform and second chances, and he just wants to basically open the jail cells. They gave the nod to a Crip street gang during the mayoral campaign. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that Fetterman stands for. That will not sit well with Pennsylvania voters, regardless if they are Republican or Democrat or independent, because they have to fear for their lives and the family and their property. So crime is going to be the issue. And as you heard Jen Psaki said, if Democrats are going to try to make it about Biden, that would be a bad, bad decision. I think they're smart enough to know that. I hope they're not, because let them go ahead and do it. They think that he is the guy. I mean, there have been polls that show that we had one the other day, and I can't recall the source, but said that in a head-to-head matchup with Trump, Biden wins by something like 5 points. Head-to-head matchup with Governor DeSantis, Biden wins by 7 points. I don't believe any of those, but that's fine. Let them do it. Now, if the Republicans get in control of both houses, they've actually got to show that they've got some spine. They can't just be out there mouthing still. They need to move forward and make things happen. Now, the other day, when Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, released his commitment to America, very much like Newt Gingrich had done, you know, the promise to America, If they follow through on that, that's going to be good. If they don't, first, shame on them. And secondly, we get rid of them right away as soon as we can. But if you listen to New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, the GOP not only has plans, but they're going to be ready to pull the trigger as soon as they walk in.
Day one, we intend to repeal the 87,000 IRS agents, the army of IRS agents that Joe Biden and Democrats have put into place to go after hardworking Americans, mom and pop small businesses, and middle class Americans. So Democrats have no plan. They are attacking us because they have created crises across this country. We have a commitment to America to tackle the crises that Democrats have created to make sure that we have a strong economy, a safe country, a future that's built upon freedom, and a government that's accountable.
I'm all in favor of that. And you should be, even if you're a Democrat. You want a government that's accountable? And you want a safe, secure government and environment around you and your family, right? And you want to have prices you can afford. Liz Cheney, Republican, Wyoming, is dissing Donald Trump again and saying, you know, she says, if Trump wins the nomination in 2024, I will no longer consider myself a Republican. She said, if he's a nominee, I won't be a Republican. I'm not losing tears over that, are you? Liz, when you leave, don't let the door slap you in the butt. Keep on going. I want you to take a look at what's happened in Italy. The Italian Central Right Coalition has winning a majority, has won a majority of the seats in the Italian chamber. It is mostly a liberal bastion in Italy, but with everything that's been going on there, like elsewhere, and that includes rising prices and everything else, some common sense has surfaced in Italy. The new premier, the first time they've had a woman premier, is Giorgia Meloni. And she said, "We will not betray your trust. We are ready to revive Italy." She said, "We defend God, country, and family." And those three things stand out for her and for those who voted for her. That's what they want to see in their nation. She said also she wants to dedicate things to traditional family values, opposition to gender ideology, that means transitional surgery and so forth, and the LGBT lobby, but also support for strong borders and end to mass migration, which has hit Italy hard as well. This is making a lot of those across Europe take a second look at where they stand, because if a center-right, not even far-right, I get by some view she might be far-right, but someone that can win on that in traditional leftist areas, that's going to make a lot of those across Europe rethink, what do we do to stay in power? We either become more adamant about family and civil rights, or we just disappear. Coming up, how Hillary Clinton defined an Ohio Trump rally. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad. So be wise and keep on reading the signs of my body. I'm on tonight, you know my hips don't lie, and I'm starting to feel your joy. Come on, let's go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I remember as a young student, you know, trying to figure out how did people get basically drawn in by Hitler. You saw the rally in Ohio the other night. Trump is there ranting and raving for more than an hour, and you have these rows of young men with their arms raised.
That's Hillary Clinton. If you stood in a row and you raised your arm, she equated you to saying Heil Hitler, like you were to Trump. That's her perspective. You may share it. I don't. But if she's really concerned about religious violence and things of that nature, let's remember something about the Hitler regime. What was the main target? Jews. So if Hillary Clinton wants to speak out against someone, how about Congresswoman Tlaib? Why doesn't she call her out for anti-Semitic remarks? Tlaib has done that, and others of the squad, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Cori Bush, Democrat of Missouri, all have been critical of Israel repeatedly. And then just last Tuesday, in remarks at the American Muslims for Palestine event, Tlaib, who is a Palestinian American, spoke out against, quote, the apartheid government of Israel, and then vowed to push back on the idea that individuals can be progressive and pro-Israel. Now, the response from Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, you could have written these remarks yourself. He said her remarks were absolutely reprehensible and anti-Semitic. He said in one sentence, she simultaneously tells American Jews they need to pass an anti-Zionist litmus test to participate in progressive spaces, even as she doubles down on her anti-Semitism by slandering Israel as an apartheid state. He said it's absolutely reprehensible, does nothing to advance the cause of peace. I didn't hear Hillary address anything about what Tlaib did. Hitler was bad. But here's Tlaib agreeing with Hitler, Jews are bad. This is not the first time she's done it, as I said. And who else in Congress is speaking out against her? Well, first of all, let me refer you to Congressman Gerald Nadler, Jew, Democrat in New York, member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He insisted again that you can embrace both positions and identities. And he was actually challenging another Jewish congressional representative. This might be one of the first times I've ever said anything really positive about this person I'm going to name. But she deserves to be praised for what she did. Her name, and I know you're familiar with it, Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democrat of Florida, Jewish. She slammed Tlaib for claiming that individuals cannot be considered progressive if they support Israel. She said that's wrong, and she spoke out against it. She denounced Tlaib's remarks also as being anti-Semitic and argued that progressivism and support for Israel are not mutually exclusive. She said the outrageous progressive litmus test on Israel by Rashida Tlaib is nothing short of anti-Semitic. Proud progressives do support Israel's right to exist as a Jewish and Democrat state. Suggesting otherwise is shameful, dangerous, divisive rhetoric does not lead to peace. Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, thank you. Because Schumer has said nothing. He's Jewish, New York, leader of the Senate. Nancy Pelosi, she's not Jewish, but she's not going to say anything. No other members of Congress, because they fear the squad. And they fear that Tlaib is going to be the next leader of the House. If Republicans do not win the House, Tlaib will probably take the gavel from Nancy Pelosi. You need to keep that in mind come November and make sure you're out there voting. And we're less than 50 days away now from the election. Coming up, two things. One, I want to tell you before we wrap up today about a woke teacher that is proud to have a non-white classroom. But before that, we're going back in history to 1960, the Nixon-Kennedy debates.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
For some companies, loyalty is a lost word. You give a company your business, your years, but in the end, you're just a number. But at Ackerman Toyota, loyalty is appreciated. Thousands of customers personally know this. New Ackerman customers quickly see it. Loyalty defines Ackerman Toyota for all customers and employees. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
It was 1989, my thoughts were short, my hair was long. Caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Good evening. The television and radio stations of the United States and their affiliated stations are proud to provide facilities for a discussion of issues in the current political campaign by the two major candidates for the presidency. The candidates need no introduction. The Republican candidate, Vice President Richard M. Nixon, and the Democratic candidate, Senator John F. Kennedy. And now for the first opening statement by Senator John F. Kennedy.
Yes, Nixon. In the election of 1860, Abraham Lincoln said the question was whether this nation could exist half slave or half free. In the election of 1960, and with the world around us, the question is whether the world will exist half slave or half free, whether it will move in the direction of freedom, in the direction of the road that we are taking, or whether it will move in the direction of slavery. I think it will depend in great measure upon what we do here in the United States, that we build, on the kind of strength that we maintain.
And now the opening statement by Vice President Richard M. Nixon.
Smith, Senator Kennedy, the things that Senator Kennedy has said, many of us can agree with. There is no question but that we cannot discuss our internal affairs in the United States without recognizing that they have a tremendous bearing on our international position. There is no question but that this nation cannot stand still, because we are in a deadly competition, a competition not only with the men in the Kremlin, but the men in Peking. We're ahead in this competition, as Senator Kennedy, I think, has implied. But when you're in a race, the only way to stay ahead is to move ahead.
Now, we obviously edited the opening remarks of both Kennedy and Nixon, but that was from 1960 and the first presidential debate held this date, September 26, 1960. It was the first presidential debate of four, and the intent was for the public to hear from both men, and it was done in a much more civil fashion, than less partisan than what we see nowadays. The idea of using the TV, of course, really worked for the charm of Kennedy. Not so well for Nixon. It looked very rigid, shuffling about a lot if he was seen on camera when Kennedy was speaking or anyone else raising a question. He wore little makeup, had kind of a light gray suit, kind of blending in the background. He looked exhausted. He kept looking at the clock. Some said he looked shifty-eyed while he was looking at the clock, because they each had 8 minutes for their opening statement and then 2.5 minute response to each question. And he was sweating a lot on top of that. He often had to wipe sweat. Well, it did not go well for him. It's just based on appearances. That was the first, and it was dealing primarily, in fact, it was limited to domestic issues. And you heard the opening by Howard K. Smith, who was a moderator. One of the issues at that time on a domestic issue, kind of similar to what we have now, referenced supply chain demand and trying to deal with corporations and keep control of pricing and things of that nature, but it focused primarily at that time on farm commodities, because there had been some restrictions on products trying to keep prices stable for farmers so they would have a guaranteed type income and they wouldn't fall below poverty level while they were trying to farm, and yet already many were. And at the same time, do you need to continue to put price controls on? In other words, it was the issue primarily of government involvement in the economy, for good or bad. So let's pick up one of those responses in question on price controls and government involvement.
In my judgment, the only policy that will work will be for effective supply and demand to be in balance, and that can only be done through governmental action. I therefore suggest that in those basic commodities which are supported, that the federal government, after endorsement by the farmers in that commodity, attempt to bring supply and demand into balance.
I, of course, disagree with Senator Kennedy insofar as his suggestion as to what should be done on the farm program. He has made the suggestion that what we need is to move in the direction of more government controls, a suggestion that would also mean raising prices that the consumers pay for products, and imposing upon the farmers controls on acreage even far more than they have today. I think this is the wrong direction. I don't think this has worked in the past. I do not think it will work in the future. It recognizes that the government has a responsibility to get the farmer out of the trouble he presently is in, because the government got him into it.
Now, a lot of that you can relate to nowadays, regardless if you understand the full debate over the farm subsidy bills at that point that were under discussion. That was the first debate. The second debate was October 7, 1960 again. That was in D.C., the first held in Chicago. The third was October 13 in New York. and the 4th, October 21, also in New York. And in New York, the 4th debate dealt upon foreign affairs.
Our policies are very different. I think that Senator Kennedy's policies and recommendations for the handling of the Castro regime are probably the most dangerously irresponsible recommendations that he's made during the course of this campaign. In effect, what Senator Kennedy recommends is that the United States government should give help to the exiles and to those within Cuba who oppose the Castro regime, provided they are anti-Batista.
Castro is only the beginning of our difficulties throughout Latin America. The big struggle will be to prevent the influence of Castro spreading to other countries, Mexico, Panama, Brazil, Bolivia, Colombia. We're going to have to try to provide closer ties, to associate ourselves with the great desire of these people for a better life, if we're going to prevent Castro's influence from spreading throughout all of Latin America. His influence is strong enough today to prevent us from getting the other countries of Latin America to join with us in economic quarantine. His influence is growing.
That was Kennedy reference Nixon on what to do about Cuba. And, of course, Kennedy would end up becoming president and not only have to deal with the Cuban crisis, but the Soviet missile crisis, as the Soviets were sending missiles to set up in Cuba. The Purdue University, doing a scholarly analysis of these debates, said that, for the most part, the most discussed issue with the debates was the notion that people who listen to the radio were more likely to vote for Nixon, while those watching TV were more likely to vote for Kennedy. The appearances and the fact the way Nixon handled himself. But if you just sit and listen, as you hear on radio now, when you hear them talk about American prestige, how much of this echoes in your mind as to what we've been through in this nation recently about making America either, quote, great again, and not just for the country, but around the world, versus the idea that we have lost face with much of the world?
Well, let me make one thing clear. Senator Kennedy has a responsibility to criticize those things that are wrong, but he has also a responsibility to be right in his criticism. Every one of these items that I've mentioned, he's been wrong, dead wrong. And for that reason, he has contributed to any lack of prestige. Did Khrushchev gain because he took his shoe off and pounded the table and shouted and insulted? Not at all. The president gained, America gained, by continuing the dignity, the decency that has characterized us. And it's that that keeps the prestige of America up, not running down America the way Senator Kennedy has been running her down.
Comment, Senator Kennedy?
I really don't need Mr. Nixon to tell me about what my responsibilities are as a citizen. I've served this country for 14 years in the Congress and before that in the service. I have just as high a devotion, just as high an opinion. What I downgrade, Mr. Nixon, is the leadership the country's getting, not the country. Now, I didn't make most of the statements that you said I made. I believe the Soviet Union is first in outer space. We may have made more shots, but the size of their rocket thrust and all the rest. You yourself said to Khrushchev, you may be ahead of us in rocket thrust, but we're ahead of you in color television, in your famous discussion in the kitchen. I think that color television is not as important as rocket thrust.
I'd have to agree with Kennedy on that. Now, that was from the 4th debate again. I want to point something out to you. Again, this is from Purdue University and its scholarly analysis, as they call it, the Kennedy-Nixon debate. They said the later debates kind of got not much better than the first for many, and folks were already deciding and had decided based on the first debate. And they thought in some cases there were personal attacks that they didn't like. One thing about it, Kennedy did reference to the debate that definitely made him look better and made Nixon look worse. And he was going to try to do it a second time. He didn't do it the first time, but it just happened to work out that way. But he realized what was happening the second time. And you want to know what Kennedy did? I'll tell you when we continue.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I'm kind of interested to see.
That's my mistake. I had asked for that sound to be played right away, and that's my part, but mistake, because I made a change on the format. Sorry to my director, Quentin. My bad. We'll get to that story in just a moment. I left you hanging on what Kennedy was doing to make sure he looked better than Nixon. As I said in the first debate, Nixon looked very sweaty. Well, Kennedy would arrive at the studios early because he was already kind of into television, and he'd check out the conditions, the lighting, even the temperature of the room. So in the first interview, Nixon looked very sweaty. Well, when they got to the second interview, Kennedy got there early, and he realized the temperature had been set down to 64 degrees to help Nixon not look so sweaty, keeping him looking cooler. And more lights were shining on Kennedy than on Nixon. So Kennedy's team started raising some arguments over it, and eventually they reached an agreement to change the temp a little bit, lower the lights, and things of that nature. That was what they were trying to do visually. As I said, the first debate had pretty much cemented for a lot of folks where they want to go. In fact, later, years later, Nixon even talking at his chief of staff, Haldeman, said, you know, in that first debate, we made the mistake of not preparing for that. He said, we just didn't do it right. I didn't know anything about doing debates at that time. So he learned the hard way. Now to what we were starting this segment with. This is a teacher, a fourth grade teacher at William Penn Elementary in Utah, and bragging about her class and how she set it up. Listen to this, please.
I'm kind of interested to see how students and parents react to my classroom, or if they even notice anything about it, because it's built for non-white students. And what I mean by that is, like, if you look around and you interact with some of the materials I have, you'll notice that there's, like, no white kids represented in that. So just on, like, that very first level of multicultural education. And I don't think, like, my new students will mind, but, you know, not a single white face there. Same with my coloring pages. I have a big stack of coloring pages that students can use, and not a single one with a person on it depicts a white person or character.
Again, this is a fourth grade teacher in Utah. Well, when she put that up on her Twitter account and the guy started spreading around, the parents certainly learned about it, and they certainly raised some noise over it. Many of them did. The school district decided it was going to do an investigation. 1 month they investigated, and they found no evidence to confirm, quote, any policy or legal violations regarding the teacher's comments and what she had done in the classroom. They did decide to reprimand her for her behavior, saying we disciplined her as appropriate and consistent with the findings of the investigation. And the principal of the school said the teacher's comments, quote, were very disconcerting. He says, inappropriate for any employee to make students feel unwelcome in any way, shape, or form. The teacher also offered some mea culpa. I sincerely regret the disruption brought to the school, faculty, community, families, and above all, my students. She knew darn well what she was doing. She made not only it happen, she promoted it and was reveling in the fact that, look what I did here. And then she said, but I strive to provide an inclusive environment to the safety and comfort of all students. This woke culture stuff has got to be halted. It's got to be called out every time it happens. That is one thing I'm going to do in this program on a continual basis. If you're all about woke culture and taking young minds and indoctrinating them and reshaping them to where they think, oh, I'm feeling different about myself today than I did yesterday, that maybe I should cut off my breast. If you're into that kind of stuff, you're going to be rebutted here at every turn. I will not yield, not one inch. not one inch when it comes to protecting children from this kind of indoctrination. And that's a polite word to use when I could use others. I'm thankful that out of the COVID crisis that a lot of this stuff suddenly got exposed and parents started watching some of the Zoom sessions with their kids and realizing they're teaching everything from critical race theory to teaching third graders about sexual transition. It's age inappropriate to begin with, and secondly, it's not their job to do that, and they were doing it without letting parents even know. So again, if on another issue, if you have friends or relatives in Florida, they're bracing for Hurricane Ian, which might end up spiraling and making a pretty direct hit upon the Tampa area. They'd be on the west coast of Florida. They don't think it might be a direct hit, but the storm surge itself might cause problems for Tampa and all up and down that side and maybe into the panhandle to the north. We will continue to monitor that, and I'm sure you will. And I know some folks who were thinking about driving down there and said, well, it would be all right, just be rain. Said, no, it's really not. You get down there, power's out, you run out of gasoline, you will not be able to get a service station to pump your gas because they have no electricity. Oh, someone said, you mean maybe it'd be better to have an electric car? I said, oh, no, I'm not suggesting that at all. That's not going to help you either when you run out of power for your electric battery. Hey, listen, as always, I appreciate your listening, spreading and sharing the word with others. You're making this program just blow up, and I appreciate it. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.